This is Polyphonic Press. The podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random.
All right, hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Big Star, number one record.
Oh, okay. That's good.
All right. So here's a description of the album. It says, released in 1972, Number One Record is the debut album by Big Star, a band from Memphis, Tennessee that blended British invasion melodies with Southern soul and jangly guitar pop. Though it wasn't a commercial success upon release, the album became one of the most influential records in rock history, laying the groundwork for what would later be called power pop. Led by Alex Chilton, formerly of the Box Tops, and Chris Bell, the album is full of shimmering harmonies, chiming guitars, and bittersweet lyrics about youth, love, and longing. Songs like The Ballad of El Gudo, 13, and When My Baby's Beside Me showcase the band's knack for melody and emotional depth, while tracks such as Feel and Don't Lie to Me add a raw edge. Despite glowing reviews, poor distribution from their label, Ardent Records, through Stax, meant Number One Record didn't reach a wide audience at the time. However, its influence can be heard in countless bands that followed, including REM, The Replacements, Teenage Fan Club, and Wilco. Today, it's celebrated as a cornerstone of American pop rock, a perfect mix of heartache and harmony that captures both the innocence and melancholy of early 1970s youth. Okay, so this album was released on April 24th, 1972. The genres are power pop, hard rock, folk rock, and southern rock. And it was released on Ardent Records and produced by John Fry. And if you're listening along, which we do encourage you to do, the album starts with the song Feel, and what we do is we pause halfway through, and the first side ends with the India song. So if you're listening along, if you want to stop after the India song and listen to the halfway discussion, and there are 12 songs in total. And we've linked the album to both Spotify and Apple Music, so you can get it on your preferred streaming service. But without further ado, okay, here we go. Here is the first song on the album, Feel. Here we go.
All right.
Okay, and ending side one with the India song. Yeah, this is really good. I'd always heard that Big Star was good and that they influenced like everybody that came after them, or at least a good handful of artists that came after them, but I never really sat down and listened to them. And this is amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I did listen to this not that long ago, maybe about a year or so ago. But yeah, it's pretty, it's solid stuff for sure.
I'm hearing everything that this influence, I'm like it was saying REM and Cheap Trick and lots of stuff, but I'm also hearing some less obvious ones. Like that last song could have been like a Sloan song, like Jay Ferguson, Sloan song. Yeah. A lot of like 90s stuff that wasn't the grunge stuff. Like a lot of pop rock bands like Gin Blossoms and those kinds of bands, the college rock radio bands. Yeah, but this is kind of where it all started, and it has a timeless quality to it that, like, yeah, it does make sense that it's 1972, but it could have been released at any point over the last, 50 years, and it still would have sounded fresh. It still sounds fresh today.
Yeah, it does. It's really interesting how that sort of style that they sort of invented was invented as early as it was, and it just laid dormant until, those who heard it sort of came out and did it in their own way.
Yeah, like definitely, I know Cheap Trick, the guys in Cheap Trick definitely said this was a big influence on them. Obviously they were a huge band, and for whatever reason, Big Star just flew under the radar. They just never, I don't know what happened. Well, it said kind of that the record company just couldn't afford to make records. They could only afford to press so many records that they literally couldn't sell that many.
Yeah, it's sort of a shame that happened at the time, but yeah, this record has sort of like gone on to become like a legendary record amongst, like, it's one of those musicians situations where people in the industry knew who it was because the record probably got distributed amongst the labels and stuff like that.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, if the record company can't, there were only so many printed. It's a huge problem if your record company can only afford to press so many like physical copies of something. And yeah, I mean, it's just you can hear like the musicianship is there. Like this, it's 72. This was like, the rise of like what they call guitar gods. And you had like Jimmy Page and Ritchie Blackmore and people like that. Those kinds of guitar, that was really what was big and popular at the time in 72. And I love all that stuff. Don't get me wrong. I love all that stuff. I'm a huge Led Zeppelin and Deep Purple fan and all that. But that was a definite style. And I think this is more like some of the guitar work on this is really a little more subtle. And it's sort of like the song is the main focus. And it's sort of like, it has it's almost like a folk rock quality to it, but not quite. It's kind of birdsy, but not totally like the Birds. It's just,
it's definitely not as boisterous as many would come along. Although it has its moments where it's almost like glam rock.
Yeah, like Don't Lie to Me. That was a fun sort of chanting glam rock kind of thing.
But yeah, they definitely carried on sort of the songwriter sort of
ethos into this that was sort of,
I don't want to say it was like it had vanished or anything like that, but it is definitely was put on the back burner for a lot of the 70s stuff, where the craft of making a song was sort of, again, not lost, but not at the forefront.
Yeah. Well, it not for bands anyway. If like the like people like Joni Mitchell and like Jackson Browne and Jim Croce and they're the 70s singer songwriter types. It was they were all solo artists, and there wasn't really, like, you're right, it wasn't the craft of songwriting was sort of reserved for more of a personal thing. It's like I'm relating to this person because they're singing a song, and it was sort of like the Byrds and the Band had sort of done that, bands in the 60s, and it's sort of like their Big Star is kind of sort of carrying that on. And yeah, and Alex Chilton, he's the guy that he's the lead singer, and he did actually he did have some success earlier in the 60s. He was in the band called the Box Tops, and they had a song called The Letter, and that was a number one hit in 67 or something like that. If it wasn't number one, it was a pretty big song.
Yeah,
but that was, it's funny how the music business or how history sees music. Like that song, that's a great song, and people reference it as like, yeah, that's a great song by this, you know, one-hit wonder band. But when people think of Alex Chilton, they don't think about that. They go, oh yeah, he's a brilliant songwriter and in Big Star, and he's, even though he, that was a bigger hit and that song probably made him more money, his legacy is this, even though nobody heard it at the time.
Yeah, it's sort of funny. I mean, I was definitely more, well, I think I've got a copy of the Box Tops album, actually. So, but I was more familiar with them than I was with Big Star for the longest time. But yeah, I mean, I don't have this on a copy of this anywhere. I really wish I did. It'd be pretty good at like all their albums. I think there's only three.
Yeah, they did. They weren't around for very long. Yeah, number one record, Radio City, and Third. Yeah, those are the only ones.
And I think they're all good.
Yeah. Yeah, he's an interesting guy, that's for sure. And he, you know, he was only, he was born in 1950. So like the Box Tops, he was only 17, released The Letter with the Box Tops.
Yeah. And he was only 22 when this came out. It's kind of amazing. Some people can put out stuff like this when they're fresh adults. But then you think about like the 27 Club and how many people, you know, died, their careers were finished then.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're not old at all.
No. It's funny. You think about like, or I always thought, oh, 27. Yeah. I mean, it sucks that they weren't around that long, but yeah, 27, you're almost 30. So it's like, yeah, you're kind of old at that point. And now that I'm, you know, a couple of years away from being 40, it's like 27 was so young. But yeah, getting back to this, I mean, yeah, I'm hearing like the song In the Street, some of the guitar work in that, I'm definitely hearing some Mike Campbell influenced stuff, or I don't know if Mike Campbell was influenced by that, but it's, I'm hearing similar guitar lines that he would come up with in that at the end of that. know, and that song obviously was used as the theme song to That 70s Show, not recorded by Big Star, but I think Cheap Trick
re-recorded it for them. Yeah.
So this is a really, really interesting album so far. But I did manage to find a few interesting facts about the album. So Chris Bell, who is the other songwriter, his perfectionism shaped the album's sound. His co-founder Chris Bell was deeply involved in the album's meticulous production, obsessing over guitar tones, vocal harmonies, and mixing details. His drive for sonic perfection gave Number One Record its crisp, luminous sound, a rarity for early 1970s American rock albums. And I will say, for 1972, that it has a very it's not overproduced, but it has a very big production. Like, it has a very full sound.
Yeah, it's very crisp in places. And it's not like they filled every gap, but they broadened what was there and made a spectrum across that filled it out really well.
Yeah. And you don't really notice the production.
No, you don't.
Some music you can tell that the producer got their hands on it and sort of just went nuts. And it's very obvious. It's like, okay, there's like 27 different percussion instruments on this. Like, what are you doing?
Make drum go boom.
Exactly. but it's big. The production is big when it needs to be, and it's sparse when it needs to be. Like, each choice kind of makes sense, and it's there to serve the song. Basically, they're not layering vocals. They are layering vocals, but they're not doing it just to do it. They're doing it when it makes sense to do it. Which is, that's when you're producing, that is hard to sort of keep your focus on, because it is easy to get carried away. A lot of the time less is more. And number two is Alex Chilton's reinvention after the Box Tops. So after fronting the Box Tops as a teen and scoring a hit with The Letter, Alex Chilton used Number One Record to reinvent himself. He shifted from blue-eyed soul singer to introspective pop craftsman, creating music that was far more personal and artistically ambitious. Definitely. And the song 13 captures the essence of teen innocence. One of the most beloved tracks, 13, was written by Chilton and Bell about the innocence and awkwardness of adolescence, sneaking out, falling in love, and listening to the Rolling Stones. It's often cited as one of the most tender songs in rock history. Yeah, that was a really good song as well. And yeah, like I was saying earlier, a label collapse killed its commercial chances. Although critics raved about the album, Stax Records' distribution deal with Columbia Records fell apart, meaning copies of the Number One Record were nearly impossible to find in stores. Despite the title, it sold fewer than 10,000 on initial release.
Wow.
So yeah, I guess the label just wasn't being funded, and just the business was just, they were just caught in bad business deals, basically. And no promotion, no people just going to the record store and looking at the cover and saying, yeah, I guess I'll take a chance on this. But that really sucks. That really sucks when you know you have a good album or great album and you know it could be a hit, but the record, like, just for whatever business that was going on, the record company is basically bankrupt. It's just nobody's going to hear it.
Yeah.
That's gotta be a gut punch. And again, like I was saying, it's a blueprint for power pop's future. While it didn't chart, Number one record inspired a generation of musicians from REM to the Replacements, who famously wrote the song Alex Chilton as a tribute. The album's mix of jangly guitars, melodic hooks, and wistful lyrics became the blueprint for power pop. I can name like 20 different bands that I can hear in this album. They didn't make any money on it, but the influence is undeniable. So those are some interesting facts about the album. But I guess we'll get back into the second side, and it starts with When My Baby's Beside Me. So here we go. Ending the album with Saint 106. I think that's how you say it. Yeah, I mean, this was a great record. There was a lot more acoustic stuff on the second side, but it was still great songs. Yeah, great band. Really tasteful production. Yeah, just an overall really great album, I think.
Yeah, I think it was recorded at Muscle Shoals. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think it was.
Let's see. Recorded in Ardent Studios in Memphis.
Oh, okay. Maybe one of their other albums was then.
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything bad to say about it. There was... The only thing that I would change is there was one guitar part that I can't even remember, so I don't think it really matters. It's just a great album. Yeah, it's the other guys, the Chris Bell. I mean, his perfectionism, that, you know, that may have been a point of contention within the band, but it gets results. That's for sure. And his meticulous production of getting like guitar tones and vocal harmonies and just everything balanced and right. It's just that kind of attention to detail definitely pays off.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about this album. It's just a pretty good album. I don't know what to say. It's very... It is sort of different for its time, for sure. Even amongst like singer songwriters and solo artists, it still comes off a little different. It still seems more like a band effort.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can definitely hear that there's, it's just a feeling. It's hard to put your finger on it, but yeah, it definitely feels like a band. Yeah, it is definitely a unique record for 1972. It doesn't sound like 1972, that's for sure. It doesn't really sound like any time. Like, it doesn't really... You can't... If you were to hear it, if you were to play for someone who didn't know this album, and you were to say, you ask them, okay, when do you think that would come out? I would have a hard time... You know, there's a couple of distinct 70s sounds, but yeah, I would just be like maybe somewhere in the 70s, but it's hard to pin down the exact era, you know?
Yeah, probably. I would guess later 70s because of just the type it is, but yeah, it's definitely before its time.
So yeah, so I guess that brings us to the time is what would be your three highlights on the album?
Well, there's a lot of really good songs on here. But I think I'm going to go with Feel because the opener was really good. I've always liked the Ballad of El Gudo. And When My Baby's Just Beside Me, maybe?
Well, yeah, those are good choices. Yeah. Yeah, I would go... I like Feel as well. That's a really good song. And then I'd probably go with... Yeah, when My Baby's Beside Me, that's a really good song too. And... yeah, and then maybe My Life is Right. I really like that one.
Okay.
But, yeah, but it's hard to choose three. There's really, like, all the songs are pretty great. But yeah, so I think I know the answer, but would you listen to this album again?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd listen to this again.
Yeah, me too. It's, I heard a few songs from it, but never listened to the whole thing, and... I'm glad I did. I don't know why. I just never really got the chance to or anything. But yeah, I would absolutely listen to this again. It's pretty great. So yeah, so I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to drop us a line, you can do that by going to the contact page at the website polyphonicpress.com/contact. And while you're there, you can get all our previous episodes that we've done so far. And maybe we've reviewed your favorite album. Who knows? Check it out. And you can help us out on the Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. You can get these episodes the day before they go live. And you can get a shout out during these episodes and even pick an album for us to review. So lots of cool stuff over there. And if this is your first time listening to us, be sure to give us a follow and leave a rating and review and let us know how you like the show. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.